This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Blue Wire.
Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is off the freeway.
What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. Here joined by the legendary Dave Hardstein, founder of ClutchFans.com. How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So as soon as the report came down the pipeline last week about the Russell Westbrook trade demand, I thought of one person and one person only to have on this podcast. And it's the guy who was possibly more negative about the Westbrook trade for Houston than I was. Like, we used to always talk about this in the bowels of Toyota Center back when we were allowed to be in the same room and speak to each other at a normal distance. Dave, I've been dying to ask you this all week. Like, where's your head at with all this craziness?
I mean, it's just unfortunate. I guess when they made that trade, I could see this exact scenario happening, but not in 1 year. I did not see this happening whatsoever. I mean, I did feel that, you know, Daryl and Harden and Westbrook would all be gone long before this debt was paid. But for this to happen so soon, I mean, I'm frustrated. I'm angry, like a lot of Rocket fans. And I'm just I don't want to see the Rockets make further mistakes, because right now is the time that, you know, they've got to get their head right and make the right moves here. But I think it was pretty clear Chris Paul was a better fit than Russell Westbrook. I think that this season played out that way. And I think the price that they paid at that time in that trade, it's probably going to go down as maybe a top 10 worst trade in NBA history, in my opinion, maybe higher. There's been some real doozies, some real bad ones, but I think it's certainly up there, in my opinion.
Yeah, I never understood it. And even at the time, I was just like, okay, if you're going to trade Chris Paul, why trade him when his value is the lowest it could possibly be? Why not confirm that he's just a bad basketball player at this point? Like, why not wait for the season to play out? I thought he was due for a bounce back season, but even if Houston thought that that wasn't the case, they could have waited. You know, they could have made this trade at the deadline. They could have made it in the summer. I'm sure OKC was going to have that on the table for them either way. It's not like the Rockets were necessarily haggling at all. They waited a week to get it done. It was very strange, the speed at which it happened. The fact that, in the moment, I think I even talked about this with you at the time, like, I never felt like Daryl Morey was the loudest voice in the room when the trade went down. And I don't know who that might have been. That could have been Tillman Fertitta. That could have been James Harden. But I can't shake that feeling that he was not the loudest voice in the room. And at all points, Daryl Morey should be the loudest voice in the room. He's earned that. And I don't understand why he didn't have it for that trade.
I think that's what's so frustrating about the situation in general. I think that's why all Rocket fans are upset right now, because you can have the smartest people, you know, Rafael's going to be great. I think you can have all these great people, but if you have outside influences making the decisions, you know, if Tillman Fertitta is making the decision or James Harden's making the decision, you know, you're limited. And I think that's, probably the big problem right now, my personal opinion is this, it was Harden and Tillman together. I mean, Harden was the monster that they created. They had really no choice because he's that good. But he ran the show, and I think he wanted Westbrook here. I think what you're seeing Harden do now, make the power play, is what happened last offseason, just in a smaller way. I think he felt that that was something that they had to do, and Tillman pushed it through. I mean, yeah, Daryl was part of it. You can't hold him completely blameless, but I think, you know, we've all watched Daryl Morey since 2006. Russell Westbrook did not fit what the Rockets were trying to accomplish. You can't have a high usage guard who cannot shoot threes and can be completely unguarded from 22 feet out. And, you know, they tried a completely different approach, and I welcomed it. They moved Clint Capella, moved an additional first round pick, and went centerless pretty much. And it had a chance. It could have worked, but for whatever reason, it still shocks me even to this day that they just completely went in the tank in those final three games against the Lakers. And that was it. And, you know, right now it's the Titanic sinking and everyone's trying to grab lifeboats.
Yeah. And at the same time, it kind of makes sense that was probably the first instance that you figured you sensed Harden's impatience, right? That he was starting to grow frustrated with the team and he forced this Westbrook trade. Like, I think at the time, you know, maybe we didn't read too much into it at the time, but I think Harden saw his window closing. He turned 30 that summer, and you got to figure that he saw Chris Paul have a bad year. He panicked and he forced this trade through. And, you know, there was obviously some friction between Paul and Harden at the end of the season. We discovered that pretty quickly. But I think more so, like, Harden saw Paul have an underwhelming postseason that year and just saw his, you know, his clock ticking, you know, for I can't think of a better way to phrase it. It's like, I think he sees his prime running out and he is panicking. He wants to win a championship.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think there are teams in the West that are starting to rise, and the Rockets are pretty much status quo, treading water or sinking a little bit. And I think he sees that. But, you know, part of it is humility. I mean, Chris Paul never thought he was a better player than James Harden. I mean, I think that was clear in every interview he ever did, talked about how historically great James Harden is. But, you know, you have to respect Chris Paul's leadership and his voice. And I think Harden did to an extent, but, you know, my personal opinion is that whole unguardable tour, you know, when Paul was injured in that season, 2018-19, Harden was historically great. And he had those stretches where he was averaging 40 a game. We're talking about Michael Jordan and we're talking about how great it is what we're witnessing. I really think that was sort of the root of some of these problems, because I think he started to look at himself even more as, well, why do I need this? And, you know, he was so individually great that I think he saw the weaknesses of Chris Paul. But, you know, what's interesting to me is James Harden is such an intelligent basketball player. So why did he let friendship override the fact that he has to have known, what Russell Westbrook's weaknesses were. I don't know why he thought that was the solution or why the Rockets would need to give up so many future pieces just to make that switch. But, you know, maybe he just didn't care because, you know, 1 year later he's out of here. But, you know, to me, I love James Harden. I'll be a fan to an extent no matter what happens. But I think this should turn off a lot of Rocket fans to see him 1 year after pushing for that trade to suddenly bail on the team.
Yeah, I can't even imagine like what Rockets fans are feeling right now. At one point, he saved them from mediocrity and the treadmill, yeah, basically, right? And
for sure.
At the other point, like, he may have, you know, expedited his own exit by forcing that trade, and I can't think of any other way to put it. Like this is partly his fault. Like, he has blood on his hands, and as we learned today, like, you know, you referenced it a little bit. I haven't really said it on the podcast. Harden now wants out of Houston, and he prefers to go to the Brooklyn Nets to team up with KD and Kyrie. The Rockets reportedly offered him a 2-year, $103 million extension, and he declined it. They're saying they're fully comfortable with keeping both of them going into next season, but who knows, like, how much of that is posturing and how much of that is serious. I'll say this. It's not looking too good. This has been the offseason from hell for the Rockets. Ever since Mike D'Antoni said he was not going to return, things have slowly spiraled downwards to the point where we're at now.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, I think fans are, all eyes are on the owner, you know, and, you know, that's what's changed over the last few years. And to see D'Antoni and Morey leave a situation that has been great for so many years, or you know, certainly giving them a great shot, is concerning. And now you've got their star players wanting to leave as well. And so, you know, it's probably the greatest competitive advantage in sports that people never really talk about is ownership. I mean, if you have ownership that's willing to spend and steps back and lets the personnel people take control and you know, make smart decisions, then I think that that's a tremendous advantage in any sport that you play. And, you know, Tillman Fertitta is, you know, we're judging him based off what we've seen the last 2-3 years, and it hasn't been good so far. So I think fans are frustrated about that and, you know, worried about some slim years. But I think, you know, if the Rockets do move James Harden, and again, that's still an if, you know, maybe they'll smooth things over. But if they do, I hope and I think that their plan is a good one, and that they're going to, you know, try to get as many future picks as possible along with young players. And, you know, hopefully that will certainly make up what they did in the Westbrook trade. And then maybe, you know, perhaps make a Westbrook trade that is, you know, they're not going to get those kind of assets, but something that can help them as well. And I will say, you know, there's really no silver lining in the Westbrook trade as far as what they gave up in the future. But to some extent there is, because if they do completely bottom out, you know, there is 1-4 protection on all those picks. And I think most of them extinguish if they're not transferred over, on even the swaps as well. So, you know, that's there is at least a little bit of an out clause in some of those picks that they owe.
Yeah, it's just jarring to see an organization, a once great organization in basketball. Like, the Rockets were a pillar in the NBA. Like they were one of the smartest teams in the NBA. They were incredibly creative. They were incredibly dynamic. They were, you know, willing to look for extra edges where other teams weren't. And obviously, they made a bunch of trades, and obviously, they were kind of unstable to some point. But it was like a stable instability in that, you know, you always knew there was a plan. You always knew that there was an owner that understood, you know, to stay out of the way and to ask the right questions. Because I think a lot of people view Les as kind of a hands-off owner. He was not hands-off. He was hands-on very much. He was just behind the scenes, so you didn't see it. And he was a very smart guy, so he asked all the right questions. So it was beneficial to have a hands-on owner if you have an owner like that. And I think even back, like, 2009, I remember reading an article the New York Times that, you know, like, Les was like considered the best owner in basketball at one point, and nobody blinked when that article came out, because he had absolutely had a case. And I completely agree. Like, the bottom is falling out for them this offseason. It's hard not to look at the common thread there. You know, Mike D'Antoni left. If you read the reporting in the Mike D'Antoni article that Kelly Eco put out, it appears that, you know, Tillman Fertitta was a part of his decision to go away, because apparently I think Mike never got a call back from Tillman or something. And, you know, Mike was like, that's it, I'm out. And, you know, they were never able to get an extension done with him the offseason prior. I think that definitely influenced his decision.
Yeah, it was the offseason prior, for sure. I mean, that set the stage. I mean, they made him a lame duck coach. You know, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, I think that for a guy of his stature and you know, what he's done for the Rockets and what he accomplished, I think that was probably offensive to him. And, you know, they were, I don't want to say nickel and diming, because we're talking about millions of dollars, but they were definitely, you know, trying to get him a little bit cheaper. And, you know, and certainly on a short-term deal. So, he, you know, he didn't like that. And I mean, they played it as if they were a team in transition. So, you know, as if they were saying, well, if D'Antoni doesn't do it this year, then we're going to look for another coach. And, you know, they obviously didn't confer with their star players, because I don't think that they anticipated that.
And I don't think Daryl Morey anticipated that, because also in that article by Kelly Eco, like, it seemed like Daryl Morey was taken aback by that. And like, I know Daryl says that he thought about this decision for a while, but did you watch his press conferences in Philly?
You know, I did not. I only saw I only heard a couple of the audio clips.
Okay, so he was talking about how he was trying to bring Doc Rivers over to Houston, and the way he was talking about it was not like, oh, I was involved in the process and I was trying to persuade him. It was like, no, if I can bring Doc Rivers over here and have him team up with us, as if he was going to stay. Like, I don't think Daryl just, like, I don't think this was like a planned, methodical decision. I really think the D'Antoni decision to walk away shook him a little bit. And I think his plan A, I mean, you don't have to believe me. Look at his quotes. Like, he said the priority for the Rockets this offseason was going to bring Mike D'Antoni back. And the fact that, you know, he stepped away, and, like, I'm sure he was frustrated a little bit with Tillman for not paying the luxury tax these past few years. Like, I think he saw an organization where, his peers are getting hired by other organizations. Like, the Rockets have been drained from a brain standpoint. Like, a lot of their talent is at the head of a lot of organizations around the league right now. He saw, you know, an ownership that wasn't willing to spend. He saw the coach that fit perfectly to the style he wanted to play alongside James Harden go away. And I think that, you know, was some of the impetus for his decision to leave. And Harden, as we know, like, he was close to both of those guys. Like, I keep saying this, and I think fans get mad at me when I say that, like, that he was actually that close to D'Antoni. I'm not exaggerating. Those guys were tight. And, like, I can't help but feel like Harden seeing both D'Antoni and Morey walk away, it's, like, also part of the decision. It's not just the Westbrook trade. Of course, that has something to do with it. But, like, the organization looks pretty unstable right now, and the guys he's trusted, you know, since he's been there, are all gone.
Yeah. I mean, even though there's, you know, a lot of guys, there's the players here to run it back, quote unquote, it looks like you're rebuilding, you're restarting. You've got a young coach, and I think they made a good coach hire, all things considered, but they've got a young coach, you know, a guy who's become a head coach for the first time here. And I think, you know, the GM, he may be familiar with him, but it's a different thing. And I think it just made Harden sort of, it probably motivated him to make that power play. You know, as far as Daryl, I really don't know all that happened there. I have to at least think, though, being in the bubble with all those NBA guys, I have to think he was aware of the Philly offer at that time. Now, again, I don't have any evidence of that or proof of that, but I mean, they had pursued him before. It got him a huge raise with the Rockets. And I think maybe some of the, you know, he probably was aware of it. Not saying he had already done that, but he, you know, I think he knew he probably had that in his back pocket when things didn't go well here. Because, yeah, I agree with you. I think Daryl probably wanted D'Antoni back. I think he probably wanted Van Gundy when things didn't go right. And I think he just probably realized he didn't have the power that he really needed to have to get this thing going, and he stepped out. I mean, you know, it was a smart move, in my opinion. I think, though, that Daryl, if he was going to step out, probably should have stepped out at the Westbrook trade, because I think, you know, Daryl's never said it, but I think he had to have known that was not a wise trade in any way. I mean, just to sacrifice your future pieces like that. I mean, 7 years out to have a pick. I mean, there will be nobody on this team, you know, that's on this team right now, on the team at that time. And he knows that. So, you know, I think if he was to step out, it probably would have been then, because it does sort of taint his record a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's right now it's a tough situation overall for the Rockets, because they've lost their leadership, and now their stars are fleeing. And at this point, if you're going to move those guys, you're probably going to move just about everybody.
Yeah, and I keep coming back to this, right? Like, let's just assume Daryl was telling the truth and that he was going to take a gap year, right? Let's just assume, let's assume everything that man was saying was true, right? It took 2 weeks to convince him to go to another organization. At the very least, if he was telling the truth, the fact that he was able to be persuaded to go to another title contender suggests that he wasn't fully content at his old job, or that he could have been convinced to stay. So either way, that's an indictment on Tillman Fertitta. Like, I can't. I don't know any other way to spin that.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, if he, you know, he obviously had what got what he needed to go there. And you can't just say, oh, it's because he wanted to go back to the East because, you know, he's got, you know, roots there or what have you.
He's been here for 13 years.
Yeah, exactly. And he's beloved in Houston. I mean, there were years where, you know, people couldn't even name players on the team, but they could name Daryl Morey. And he kept this. I mean, what he did, you know, forget the last year and forget the Westbrook trade, but everything before that and all the runs he was brought here to be able to find those value pieces around Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady. And he never had those guys healthy. But I mean, right off the bat, I mean, I still remember Clutch fans in 2006, myself leading the charge about how horrible that, you know, eighth pick of the draft for Shane Battier was. But, you know, you put that contrast, Shane Battier, the no stats all-star, to Russell Westbrook, who's the all stats all-star, if you will. And it's just such a contradiction. I mean, it's Daryl Morey was about finding the value and pulling value out of basically nothing. And instead it became, you know, at the very end, just crashed into this give up so much value for, you know, star attractions that really didn't add the value to the team. But yeah, I have mad respect for Daryl Morey, for everything he did here. I think a lot of fans right now, or I should say some fans, are pretty upset, feeling like he just went out the back door with, and the team's left in shambles. But I personally feel that was not totally his decision, and a lot of it was out of his hands.
I mean, if you go back to that summer specifically, like, I remember seeing Chris Paul and Morey deny on Instagram the reporting. And do you remember that quote where he said, like, we are 100% going to bring Chris Paul back?
Yeah.
I think that was his plan. I think until the Westbrook trade became available, I think he didn't give up on Chris Paul. I think he wanted to bring him back. I think he knew he was due for a bounce back season.
Well, I'm not sure if he knew about that. I think he just felt like, you know, what was being offered out there, you know, he just felt like that wasn't, you know, we're going to go with Chris Paul. I don't know if he knew about the bounce back season. I personally felt like, why would you trade Chris Paul right now? It's a sell low situation, the absolute opposite of what you want to do. And as a matter of fact, if you were to compare that to right now, if Russell Westbrook's value is very low and you have to trade Harden, I wouldn't even mind running for a while with Russ as the lead, kind of become the OKC and just showcase this player, and at the right time, at the right, you know, deadline or what have you, move him and get what you can for him. I think what OKC's done is brilliant. I mean, it may not work out, but they've added so many picks that, you know, that's, in my opinion, the way to go. Something's going to hit. And, you know, I just think that basically the Rockets are in that sort of boat where they don't know which direction they're going to go. They know they have a bunch of future pieces that they've given up, and they've got to recover that if they're going to rebuild at all, because it's going to be some lean years if they don't.
Before we get into what the Rockets will and should do, let's talk about like how they got to this point, because I think that's important. So the situation is pretty unique in that there's a million what ifs you could point to. Like, what if Chris Paul never tears his hamstring? What if the Rockets don't miss 27 straight threes? What if they paid the luxury tax? What if they never traded for Westbrook? All of that is fair. But for you, is there one what if that sticks out among the rest?
Well, I think the obvious one is you mentioned is the hamstring. If that hadn't happened,
I agree.
I mean, they would have the title. They would have beaten LeBron. It would have just been the NBA history would have been completely different. James Harden would be a champion. Chris Paul would be a champion. They would have beaten LeBron. I mean, they would have crushed LeBron and the Cavs that year. But whatever. But to me, it will always be the Westbrook trade. I mean, that you know, if you knew that you were getting to that point, I mean, granted, James Harden just had another MVP caliber season, probably should have been the MVP. But when they pushed that into, you know, pushed the Rockets and Tillman did as well into making that kind of decision, you know, I was always going to be okay with the time where James Harden made this type of decision. You know, it's not working out. Let's go. You know, I need to go to a contender. I would have always been okay with that. If they hadn't made the Westbrook trade, but making the Westbrook trade and going all in, I mean, he would basically be leaving this team in shambles, in my personal opinion. And I feel like it's, I don't want to say cowardly, that's probably a little harsh, but I just feel like it's gotten me to turn a little bit on Harden, and I think other fans as well, because I feel like, hey, you know, you this is what you wanted, and you got it, and now you're bailing. So, and it's not like you can reverse this kind of thing. So that to me is probably the biggest what if, because I think, you know, the Rockets could transition wisely and smartly to a solid rebuild if they had to. But, you know, right now they're not in any position to do that. They really, when they made that Westbrook trade, they really needed to go 2-3 years. I really gave it 2 years. And before making this kind of decision, this is not the best time, because, you know, you do owe this pick coming up. I can't remember the protections on this particular one. Maybe it's just top four. You know, this pick that they owed OKC for this coming a year from now.
Oh, it's just a swap.
Oh, it's a swap. Okay. I can't remember if it's the top four protection on the swap. Like if the Rockets get a top four, then they don't swap out. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, if you completely tank this year, that's the only way you really are going to get value for a terrible season.
Yeah. And it's not even just that that they traded those picks, is that those picks are capital, so that if Harden is truly unhappy, they could make another move this offseason with Chris Paul still on their roster and trade perhaps, you know, Robert Covington, or if they still have Clint Capella, they could trade Eric Gordon, they could trade any one of those contracts. And perhaps, I don't know if there's one available for them, but, you know, perhaps try to swing for a third star.
Yeah,
they could do that this offseason if they didn't trade all those picks.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if this team, I mean, they would have been completely different last year. My personal opinion is if they had Chris Paul and with this whole plant-based and complete turnaround, I think they'd beat the Lakers, but that's just opinion. But if you had Chris Paul on this team and you didn't trade those picks, I mean, they were pursuing Jimmy Butler at an expiring situation with four picks, which I thought was crazy at the time. But I mean, if you're going to give up your future picks, think of what you could have added to those two. And the whole reason you traded Chris Paul, yes, Tillman thought it was one of the, you know, if not the worst, he thought it was one of the worst contracts in the NBA, and actually, ironically, acquired arguably the worst contract in the NBA, or certainly one of, in doing that. But you know, the real reason they had to make that move was because of Harden. I mean, Harden was that's documented. He was calling daily Daryl, you know, finding out what the status is, you know, do we have Rush yet and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, if they could have just taken a step back, just maybe a little bit of humility from James Harden and fix that with Chris Paul, you know, they would be in a much better situation to, like you said, acquire a third star with those kind of assets.
It is just crazy to think about how NBA history could turn on a dime or turn on a hamstring like that. Like, if Chris Paul doesn't tear his hamstring, the Rockets probably advance to the finals and maybe win the championship. There are other people that say maybe the Cavs give him a shot. So let's just say they maybe win a championship. He doesn't have a poor 2018 season on Chris Paul because he's not recovering from a hamstring. The Rockets don't trade for Westbrook because Chris Paul's value is pretty high.
Yeah,
they still have all their upcoming picks. And Harden, Morey, and D'Antoni aren't as disgruntled because maybe they have a championship. Like, I think it will go down as the greatest what if in franchise history, and I don't think it's close. I think Yao Ming's foot is pretty up there, but I think, you know, this probably tops it.
Yeah, I think you could make that case. I don't, as far as NBA history, I don't know. I had to scan that and think about that. But franchise, if that's what you're saying, I would agree with that. I mean, that's, I mean, maybe you can go back to the 80s where you think to yourself, if you traded Samson for Jordan, how would that have been? It's certainly up there because that, I mean, and what a great championship it would have been to have beaten the Warriors in their prime all together like that. You know, no other team even made noise against them. Really at all. I mean, you can throw out the Raptors championship. I mean, congrats to them, but you know, there are all kinds of injuries in that series. But you know, what the Rockets did to the Warriors being up 3-2 like that. I mean, that was to me incredibly impressive. And I think the Rockets played so well together as a unit and had, you know, I guess there's all kinds of what ifs you could look about that. Even with Paul out, they could have, there were a lot of what ifs. They could have won that series, but yeah, it's definitely still painful to this day.
2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world and more total visits than any other job sites, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with the candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. All right, football is back in full swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager on than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day and every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Yeah, and what's so impressive about that series is even after Paul went down, they still fought pretty hard. Like, I think people forget they lost that last game by 8 points, I think. And like Harden, like that was without Chris Paul, and they missed a bunch of threes. And like you kind of figure if you have Chris Paul in that situation, home court game seven, I think they win that game. I really do. I think they win that series with Chris Paul. Even if you think the Warriors take game six, you know, Klay Thompson always has his game sixes. Like, I think they win game seven, and it's a great what if. It's a great what if. Okay, now let's talk about what the Rockets should do now. I think it's pretty clear. If both Harden and Westbrook are past the point of being convinced, they should blow it up. But they have no incentive to rush this or trade them to the teams of their choice. Like, Harden is locked under contract for 2 more years. He has limited leverage, and the Rockets can wait until they get the best offer for them. He may still end up on the Nets, but the Rockets can squeeze Brooklyn for the most possible assets. And I don't even think Brooklyn has the best possible offer on the table. That's clearly Philadelphia with Ben Simmons. And Harden's a perennial MVP candidate. He's like a generational offensive talent. These offers are still going to be on the table at the trade deadline or even next summer. I see no reason for them to rush this.
Well, there's so many things that we don't know. Like, so we know certain things, but there's a lot of puzzle pieces missing. And I mean, think about what Russell Westbrook is thinking right now. You know, I mean, he was recruited, you know, for lack of a better term, to come here, and here's James Harden wanting out and wants to go play with his also OKC buddy, who's really Westbrook's rival, more or less. In KD, I mean, I would guess, again, I don't know this for certain, but I would guess he feels a little bit betrayed. I don't know what their relationship is like right now. They've always been great friends, so I'm sure it will probably be smoothed over, but, you know, what it is right now, we don't know. But I think to me, the Rockets, the first thing that they need to do is try to fix things with James Harden. So try to fix the situation and then talk about, okay, what can we do to improve this roster? And if for me, I've always taken this as James Harden and Russell Westbrook are attached at the hip. Like I felt like if you traded Westbrook, James would be like, I'm out of here. Forget it. So I'd like to figure out what's going on there, because if the Rockets are able to move Westbrook, there's a chance they could get better. I mean, that's just my opinion. I know other, you know, a lot of Russ fans and other people will criticize me for saying that, but I mean, cause he's a good player at what he does. I think what the Rockets trying to accomplish, I'm not so sure. I mean, what can they get for Russell Westbrook? Realistically, it's a huge contract. So I'd like to know that. I think the first thing they want to do is smooth things over with Harden. If that can't happen, in my personal opinion, for him wanting out at this point with really all that's happened over the last year, I mean, I'm just holding out for the best deal. I'm not looking to move him to Brooklyn only, which is the only, you know, apparently the only destination he wants. To me, it's who's going to come up with the best deal. And, you know, and that's it. I think I would want at least what, what OKC got for Paul George, if not more. I think Ben Simmons is attractive as far as, you know, being able to have a young star. But picks, we need picks, because whether you use them or you trade them or whatever, you can use that as currency in this league to improve your team. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm not looking at, you know, making James Harden happy, because if he leaves here, I mean, he's taken, he's leaving basically scorched earth here in Houston.
Yeah, the market for Westbrook is so fascinating because it is really barren. Like, you're talking about like three or four teams that might potentially have interest. And these are like middling teams in the Eastern Conference that just want to taste the playoffs. And I think even those teams want like first round picks back. And if that's the case, the Rockets should absolutely not trade Westbrook. Like, that's like, you as a franchise are in no position to trade any more first round picks, straight up. Like, unless you're getting a star player back, you're past that point where you can just trade first round picks to improve. And I think the only improvements the Rockets can find are on the margins. I think, you know, you bring the roster back, you sign someone for the taxpayer MLE, maybe the veterans minimum, like, that's it. Like, I don't see any other way you can improve, because I don't think you should be trading those first round picks. Like, that OKC trade left you so barren on picks, and you know, you traded picks for in the Covington deal. Like, I don't think the Rockets can afford to move picks like that. Like, I think, like, if they find a deal, they should be prepared to take back some, you know, maybe not the best contracts, but maybe some better fitting pieces. I understand what you're saying. Like, I completely agree. I think the floor of a Harden and parts team is better than a Harden and a Russ trade, but the ceiling might be better with the latter, right?
Yeah, as far as
Harden and Russ.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, there's so many factors here that we just don't know. I mean, obviously, Tillman Fertitta, you know, even before COVID became an issue, was, you know, showing signs
hemorrhaging
of
money.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, certainly now he is, I for sure. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, we've seen him borrow money, but, you know, he had to borrow money to buy the Rockets as well. And so I think it's going to sound like I'm totally defending him, but it's not where I'm going. I think he does get a bad rap for not spending the luxury tax at times, because Les Alexander did it, twice in 25 years? And I think one time was accidental. I mean, they tried to get under and were just like a few hundred thousand over. But, you know, I think to not spend in 18-19 when they were trying to avoid the repeater tax, assuming that Chris Paul was going to be there. But that was a good opportunity for them. And they really cheaped out. I mean, James Ennis was just a flop. And, you know, to have to keep Daniel House in the D League. I mean, they went to great lengths to avoid paying the luxury tax that year. And, you know, Terrell earned his salary. I'll put it that way in making all these moves. But, you know, the Rockets for years have been throwing away picks. I think the Lou Williams trade was a good one to get, you know, that year where they wanted to unload Brewer and they got Lou Williams, and, you know, they gave the Lakers a first round pick. That was a good trade, but there were other years where they were just, you know, trading first round picks to get rid of salaries. I mean, Jeremy Lin was one and others. And so, you know, that hurts because you don't have the young players, you know, they haven't really had a young player to groom in a while. I mean, we got all pumped up about Isaiah Hartenstein, and that was a waste of time. And so, you know, there's a need for youth, I think, in general. Just, you know, you see what Daniel House did when he played well. I mean, that could have a huge impact around a guy like Harden. So if you were to add a pick in the 10 to 20 range, I mean, who knows? You know, if you have a shrewd and smart management, scouting team, who knows who you could pull from there? You could get a guy who could groom out to be a third star or certainly a starter or significant contributor. So to me, you know, not having picks and not even having second rounders really has hurt the team for a few years.
Yeah, this might be a not bad summer to trade PJ Tucker. Even if you try to bring the team back and you try to, you know, go at it again, like just to get a first round pick back and, you know, to use that first round pick and, you know, maybe you can use that in a Westbrook trade. Maybe you can use that. I mean, maybe you can just keep it. Maybe you can keep the young asset and draft it. You're like, you know, there are some things they can try. It just, they're in a bad spot though. It's going to be really tough. I have no sympathy for Rafael Stone.
Yeah, you know, no doubt. I mean, it's going to be very tough because, I mean, yeah, think about it. When you're a contending team, you add the, I mean, look at what the Warriors did. Added DeMarcus Cousins at the time for $5 million, which just created shockwaves around the league. And then the next year signs for like $2 million with the Lakers, you know, because he just, for whatever reason, wasn't able to get what he thought. My point is contending teams can usually sometimes get players maybe a little bit cheaper. I mean, PJ Tucker wanted to be here and, you know, and sign that deal for possibly below market value at that time. To me, the Rockets, given what Harden and Westbrook have said, I mean, they're just a completely unattractive situation. I mean, who's going to want to come here? They don't even know if they're going to be playing with James Harden and Russell Westbrook or one or the other or neither. So, I mean, this whole, you know, that's why I say people, I think fans could be a little bit upset right now because why, you know, the Rockets Harden and maybe to a lesser extent Westbrook have really put the Rockets in a tough situation. I mean, they can go in a variety of directions, but they certainly can't attract very easily, win now pieces on the market. And, you're not going to see James Harden and Russell Westbrook joining any recruiting pitches with Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler right now. So, It's frustrating all around, and the Rockets have got to figure this out. But I would take the Pelicans approach, like that they did with Anthony Davis. I would, Anthony Davis tried to strong arm his way to LA, and ultimately it did work. But you need to get a haul. You need to get a ton of assets if you're going to move a James Harden in his prime or the tail end of his prime, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he could win a championship for the team that he goes to, and certainly Brooklyn could, if he goes to Brooklyn, they're possibly the leading contender to win it all next year. So you better get everything and then some in any kind of trade for James Harden.
You know, each individual move they made this summer, like it might be defensible as one, but it's the whole, right? And it's the process behind it that makes you question what's going on upstairs. And it's like, like you said earlier, like, yeah, Rafael Stone could be completely awesome at his job. He could be, one of the best in the league. We have no idea. But the problem is you let one of the best in the league walk away. Steven Silas could be an amazing head coach, but you let a proven asset walk away in Mike D'Antoni, right? And someone who had a strong relationship with the star player. And that's kind of why I think this is why, you said at the top of the podcast, like ownership is the most important element that we don't talk enough about in the NBA. It's the most, I think Les Alexander had a capability to have the longest view in the room that Tillman doesn't possess, or at least doesn't possess yet, that anything we've seen, right? Like, I think Tillman seems to be a little bit more impatient about this stuff. And Les was very much like seeing things like 5, 10, 15 years ahead. And I don't know if I see that with this new ownership.
Yeah, I think as far as way out into the future, just bits and pieces I've heard here and there, I think the Rockets will be in better hands when the ownership is probably more in Tillman's kids' hands than Tillman himself. I mean, Tillman is a very can be very abrasive personality, can be a yeller, a screamer, and he's very in your face. And so it's definitely different than Les Alexander. When he first bought the team, I saw a lot of improvements in things. Things that don't necessarily matter as far as on court, but there were more finer things, if you will, that he was making upgrades. It seemed like he was more willing to spend than Les Alexander at that time. But it just hasn't hasn't been that way. And I will say that if I owned the Rockets and let's say I had billions of dollars, I'm not sure unless I could, you know, be pretty dang sure that I was adding a significant contributor. I'm not sure I want to jump into the luxury tax either. I mean, it's an unattractive situation for any owner, but you know, if they had times, I mean, like, could they not have gotten Jeremy Grant when you know, in that Westbrook trade? I mean, I tend to think that with the first round picks they were giving up, they probably could have. I mean, and with the margin, you know, they could have taken on that salary, which would have been attractive as well to OKC. That could have been worth paying the luxury tax for. That could have been a significant contributor. But I just don't, you know, most years, I think it's hard to justify paying the luxury tax unless you're in a situation like the Golden State Warriors, where you've got just megastars across the board and, you know, you're printing money, basically.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem I have with that. Like, you have a player that's probably going to go down as one of the 25 greatest players of all time in James Harden. Like, that's how good he is. And you're the next iteration of your team, whether that's a championship contender or not, you're likely not going to get a player as good as this. Like, just that's just the odds. Like, even if you go get Ben Simmons, even if you go get, you know, a ton of picks, it doesn't matter. Like, that player, whoever your best player is, probably isn't going to be as good as this guy. And when you have a player as good as this guy, you do everything you possibly can to get every competitive advantage you can to win a championship. And that's what's disappointing, is I don't think the Rockets did. I don't. And you know, you're referencing the Westbrook trade where they could have added on salary. And, you know, that's part of it. Also, like, they could have done other stuff. Like, they, even if, like, listen, I thought Trevor Ariza was kind of past his prime there, like, when the Rockets let him go. But they could have brought him back to use that contract in other trades, right? They had his bird rights. So they could have paid him whatever he wanted, and they could have used that contract to acquire other players. And
you are right on that. But if I'm not mistaken, at that time, Ryan Anderson was still under contract, right? It would have been a huge luxury tax bill. But yes, they could have brought Ariza back.
Or even Iman Shumpert. They could have brought Iman Shumpert back for his bird rights. Yeah, and these are the kinds of small things that can help you win on the margins. And the fact that Houston didn't do that, I can't think of anything else now other than calling it an indictment. Like, listen, I've been pretty patient with ownership. The way I've evaluated them is like, okay, I'm just going to wait a few more, wait a year. I want the full picture. I want as many data points as I can before I make a judgment. But this summer, like, the bottom fell out. Like, you just let Mike and Daryl walk away in one summer. Like, that's the greatest indictment you could find. And like Harden might have hemorrhaged the franchise a little bit. I agree, but I don't blame him, like, for just growing impatient with the franchise or wanting out now. Like, it's going to take a lot of massaging to fix this.
I will say, I don't blame Harden for being impatient or wanting to add assets. I do blame him as any kind of general manager for thinking Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook plus all the, you know, Chris Paul plus all those assets for Russell Westbrook was a smart on the court decision. Like, you know, if he wants to talk about a marketing decision or having a buddy neck by your side and not going to, you know, get in your ear, then yeah, he got what he wanted. But as far as any kind of on the court decision, to me, James Harden, the GM, would have been fired the moment that deal happened. But you know, James Harden, the player, is so great that you have to, it's just, like I said, they created a monster because, you know, he was so good and is so good that you have to keep him happy. I mean, that's just the way it is in this day and age in the NBA. I mean, if you have an elite talent like that, I mean, James Harden's floor is probably 45, 48, 50 wins just having him on the team. And, you know, and that's just adding four guys off the D League around him. So, you know, to me, you have to keep him happy, but something needed to happen there because that was just, I mean, it basically derailed the franchise completely. I mean, it's one singular move that just the Rockets train went off the tracks at that point.
The ending is never pretty in these kinds of situations. And this is not going to go down as one of those storybook endings. Like, it's ugly. It's ugly. And even if the Rockets can manage to persuade James Harden to ride it out one more season, I just don't see a scenario where they're seriously in the title hunt next year. I just think the West is too good. Like, I think there are three or four good teams that I would classify as better than the Rockets right now. And the Rockets just don't have that many pathways to improve. It's going to be, again, like, this is the toughest job in the NBA right now. And it sucks that a rookie GM is taking it over, but it is what it is.
Yeah, I will say, not to interrupt you there, but I think they have to have the run it back threat to get what they want. Because if anyone else thinks they have, if any team in the league thinks they have to move Harden, then then they're not going to get everything that they want. So ideally, you've got a D'Antoni and Daryl Morey bidding war going on between Philly and Brooklyn, because you need to get paid. And I don't know how OKC was able to squeeze what they did out of the Rockets. I have no idea how they were able to squeeze what they did out of the Clippers, but the Rockets need to do that and then some from some franchise that is just exactly in the situation the Rockets were last year, desperate to make it happen. You know, maybe KD's in their ear saying we need to make this happen, and they're dumping everything. But I don't like what the, as far as players, young players, what Brooklyn can offer compared to what possibly Philly could offer.
I just love the idea of like the entire league dumping on Sam Presti for like 10 years for this Harden trade. And this is like his form of revenge. It's like, okay, I have 16 first round picks for the next 6 years. Like, is that good enough of an apology for you guys? Like, am I good now? Like, it's just like, this is just hilarious watching accumulate picks like this. Like, he got another first round pick today in the Chris Paul trade, and he's probably going to get another one for trading Ricky Rubio. It's going to be, oh my God. There's going to be a draft where Sam Presti's just up there like, okay, we'll take this guy, then this guy, then this guy. And then that team could take this guy, but then our pick after that is this guy. It's just like, it's hilarious.
He's taking the Sam Hinkie role. I mean, that's what Hinkie did with Philly and set them up beautifully before they made the similar type of mistakes where they overpaid a bunch of players. OKC's, they're obviously loved by everyone right now because they have all these future pieces. But once they start making decisions, contracts and stuff like that, then things start getting cemented in. But you're right. Right now, I mean, I'm jealous of their situation because I think they're patient, and they've got a GM who's able to scoop up the picks like that. That's the goal. And the ownership is okay with that.
Yeah. Well, listen, we did it. We podcasted for 45 minutes and the Rockets didn't make any moves. No news broke. it feels like the first 45 minutes in 3 days where nothing happened. Dave, where can we follow you on Twitter and listen to your podcast?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've done a podcast. I'm going to do one with Bema Thug soon. Just on Twitter at Clutch Fans, and the website's clutchfans.net. Just a message board and blogs and articles and fans just right now up in arms. But I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on.
You bet, man. Thank you.
And we are back after the Rockets just traded Robert Covington for Trevor Ariza and two first-round picks from the Blazers. What are you thinking, man? You think this is it? You think they're tearing it up now?
Yeah, it's funny, right? You had mentioned, let's see if we can get a podcast done without the Rockets doing anything, and this happened just a few minutes after we finished this up. I think this is it's the start of something, right? I mean, on one hand, it looks absolutely like, okay, the rebuild has begun because Covington's a better player than Ariza at this point and was so key defensively. And he's just a better player than Trevor Ariza at this point. But at the same time, I'm not ready to say it's a total rebuild just yet, that they're going to throw their stars away, because Ariza is comfortable around PJ Tucker and James Harden. And he knows how this team plays and is a very key contributor. He's a few years older. But there's just so much irony here. This is the third stint for Trevor Ariza. I mean, he originally signed here as a free agent. I think it was 2009 maybe. Was here to be with Yao Ming, and it didn't work out necessarily. Then they, brought him back later on with, the Harden's years. But I'm not ready to say they are a complete rebuild right now, because I think Trevor Ariza still fits into win now mode. I mean, he's a solid contributor. But I love this trade as far as getting some picks. I mean, that's something that this team needs. Whether it's even moving these young players for something else that, keeps James Harden more interested here. But just, they need some young players. They need some youth, some talent. So I'm excited about that. I mean, like, you know, all the things that the Westbrook trade did, this at least replaces two picks that you you were missing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I don't know if this is a sign of a rebuild or if it's a sign of things to come. It's like one of those things where, like, I need to see the second move, because you got to figure there's going to be a second move coming. This move is not something you do in a vacuum and then start the season. This is a move you do if you're going to blow it up and you trade all these other extra parts, or you're using those first round picks for something else. And I'm not sure if that's what they're doing, or if they see someone in the draft that they really like that can help them win now. It's hard to imagine, right? Because Covington was so valuable. But maybe they see someone. I mean, I haven't really studied this draft that much, because
me neither. It's funny you said that. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just like we don't have that much tape from this draft at all to watch. And I the Rockets didn't have a pick, so I was like, I don't have to watch anything from this draft. And I was just like, now I'm like, I'm wondering if they're chasing a vet or they're chasing a young player. It's tough to tell.
Yeah, you know, it's not like this great draft, certainly, like, necessarily up at the top, but. You know, I've kind of wondered if the Rockets were, you know, or I should say if this draft in general would be good, because they don't, like you said, they don't have much tape on a lot of these guys. We didn't get to see a tournament. You know, granted, personnel teams across the league, or, you know, teams know a lot of these guys. They've been following them probably since they were, you know, in junior high or high school. They know a lot of players that are out there. But I just tend to think that some players may slip through the cracks, and maybe at 16, which I'm ecstatic that they have the 16th pick, you know, they're able to find somebody with some high upside, or somebody who's, you know, a junior or senior and can contribute now, and is overlooked by younger teams that are looking for future pieces. So who knows? But to me, this is a much needed influx of youth. They have to get some picks, whether, like I said, whether they add them or, you know, actually select players or trade them for what they need at the moment.
By the way, does Trevor Ariza, like, bring his old jersey back, or do you think they make new ones for him? Because you got to figure he's only been here, what, 2 years ago? I feel like he already has a jersey ready to go.
Yeah, he definitely's got one that's probably not the exact ones that they're running with right at this moment. But yes, he's got his Rockets jersey. He's probably got several of them. And, you know, I don't think Trevor Ariza wanted to leave, but I think he knew he wasn't going to get paid here. So it is kind of interesting that he's coming back here on probably $12 million average annual salary. I think this is the final year of his deal. You know, the Rockets net a couple picks. They get a guy who is similar to Ariza, albeit older. I mean, excuse me, similar to Covington. But he's very familiar with this team. He can fill a role. If the Rockets are going to run it back, I mean, who better to run it back with than Trevor Ariza? I mean, well, Robert Covington's better, right? But I'm saying Trevor Ariza is very familiar with all of these players.
And this could also be like an in-between move. Like, this could also just mean like, oh no, we just want the first round picks. We want to cash in on this while we can and also still win now. And I don't know, like, because you also figure, like, we talked about before we stopped recording that the Rockets are going to need first round picks if they trade Westbrook this summer, or rather this offseason. And this is first round picks that you could use to in a Westbrook trade. And this deal isn't done yet, right? It's only agreed upon in principle, because they can't do the trade because they haven't.
Correct.
Yeah, they can't select. They have to select the 2020 pick first. And so the Rockets will tell Portland who to select. That doesn't really matter. But the trade's not done yet. So you kind of figure, like, does Houston expand this trade? Did they use those first-round picks? Did they reroute it to another team to take on Westbrook? Did they reroute it to another team to do something else? You know, it's just too vague. I don't have a sense of what they're doing yet. And I guess it's exciting. You know, it's something different. They aren't spinning their wheels a little bit. They're trying to get creative, but I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's my initial reaction was, okay, there it goes. It's starting the rebuild, you know, because you lose a guy like Covington. But no, I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that they can still go either way with this trade. I mean, the initial reaction is they got worse as far as players on the court. You know, they added Ariza, lose Covington. I mean, Covington was so key in what they were doing, but Silas wants to run, you know, he's envisioning a center here. They're going to run something different. So, you know, I think Ariza could fill that three role. if they run it back for a year. So I don't think it necessarily signals they're out. I mean, it now gives the Rockets young pieces to get something that they need if they convince James Harden to stay. So, you know, people who are thinking, oh, this is it, it's over, it's, you know, maybe. But to me, they at least now have some chips to that they can move in on the table and say, hey, we're in the game. You know, we can add somebody here that, you know, acquire somebody that helps us to contend this year. So, but, you know, overlooked in the fact is that Portland gets better. Portland, you know, added a significant contributor here. So you've improved a team in the West that's a rival. So, I mean, I lean a little bit like the Rockets are hedging their bet if they really can't convince Harden to stay, and Ariza, maybe you can flip him at the deadline or sooner for an additional pick or two or something. You know, in my opinion, this doesn't dictate for sure that they're not going to have James Harden back.
Yeah, or they just have the contract of Ariza to do something else, right? Like, I don't think, you know, I don't think they're necessarily done trading Ariza. I'd be surprised if they're just going to keep him for the rest of the year, but I suspect they're going to move him at the deadline, whether that's for a trade that gets you back a first-round pick or whether that's a trade that gets you back a contributor. It really depends on what the Rockets do for the rest of the offseason to figure out what they're doing. Like, I'm still in wait and see. Like, I don't know what they're doing, but this is the kind of move where you can hedge either way, as you said.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, yes, I would agree with you that they'll flip Ariza if they don't bring Harden back. You know, I think he's going to possibly be an important piece to the team if they do and they're running it back. But if they don't, yeah, I mean, do exactly what OKC is doing. I mean, I think I really feel like the Rockets sort of pioneered this approach, or they really, you know, started this approach before they got Harden. That's kind of how they positioned themselves to get Harden. I mean, they weren't the first team to do it, but they did it more significantly. And then Sam Hinkie went to Philly and just cranked it up to 11, you know, and did it extensively, acquire as many picks as possible. And I think if Hinkie has stayed there, I don't want to get way off course, you know, he would have used all those pick assets that he had to acquire pieces around his young picks that hit. So, that's if the Rockets are going to rebuild, if they do go that route, then yes, Trevor Ariza is a piece that if you flip it, you know, if you're willing to spend a little bit of money, which we don't know about Tillman, you can flip it at the deadline for perhaps a contract that goes an extra year at 10 to 12 million and you get a first round pick. You know, you're taking a salary burden off of somebody, or similar to what Phoenix did. They picked up Kelly Oubre for Ariza because the team felt like, you know, Trevor could help them contend. And so, you know, anything's possible. You know, I don't think that this dictates, like I said, that they're going to rebuild, but maybe I'm leaning a little bit that way.
This is a crazy stat by Jonathan Fagan, retweeted it. Trevor Ariza played for the Rockets on four different presidential terms. That's just dumb. That's just dumb. I mean, he just has the Rockets can't shake him. The Rockets cannot shake him. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what they do. If they do tear it down, I mean, it'd be interesting if they tear it down around Harden, because that's like the third option here, right? They can tear it down, including Harden, or they can bring back the entire core. If they tear it down around Harden, perhaps, you know, try to rebuild some of that. I mean, it's been talked about a bunch. Try to rebuild some of that 2016-17 team where you're just shooters, a role man, and Harden. That's a fun team. That's a winning team. It gets you to 50 wins. I'm not sure if Harden's necessarily going to be happy with that, but you know, it's the kind of thing where, like, you can go both ways. You can use those assets again, and, you know, I don't know. I have a bunch of scattered thoughts right now. It's one of those. They always do these trades at like 11 o'clock at night. So it's well, yeah. This was fun. We got this podcast in, and hopefully nothing happens after we stop recording this time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Follow Dave on Twitter @ClutchFans. Go on his website, clutchfans.com. Subscribe to his podcast. And yeah, guys, good night.